Welcome to the Silver Screen Podcast. I'm Jared Boomer.
And I'm Katie Gainey. This is a podcast about movies and pop culture.
And today we are talking about a new movie that is on Netflix, directed by Spike Lee. It is called The Five Bloods, and we'll talk about our likes and dislikes with that and get into that review coming up here in just a few minutes. However, first, to start the show, we always like to start with some news, and we have some big news items today to talk about. One of those regarding the Oscars, which is a big ceremony that happens, you know, every year, basically celebrating the year in movies. Katie always has a big Oscar party. We all go to her house. We watch the Oscars. We have snacks. We have a fun time. But the Oscars have moved this year, Katie. So instead of being in February, they will now be Sunday, April 25th of 2021.
I know. I could not believe it. I think I texted you, my brother, and my boyfriend all at the same time. And I said, oh my Lord. Or I might have said something else, but either way, I was like, the Oscars have just changed. And my brother, you know, we've had him on the show. I adore him.
Yeah.
He does not always respond to my text right away. He responded immediately to that one, which I thought was really cute.
I just, I really like your brother at the Oscar party because he doesn't keep up with like the celebrities as much as you do. So he's always like, Katie, who's that? Katie, who's this? Katie, who's that?
Yeah.
And then he'll have like two
he'll
have like two of the best picture nominees that he's seen. And he's just rooting for those two to win the entire time. So in all categories.
Yeah.
So, cause those are the ones that he saw. So some things on the 93rd Oscars, the eligibility date is longer. So any movie that came out between January 1st of this year and February 28th of next year is eligible to be nominated for an Academy Award. So the gap is a little bit, the entry period is a little bit larger now because of movies getting pushed back due to COVID-19. Then there's something interesting that was on this list. The shortlist announcement, Tuesday, February 9th of 2021. I don't feel like that hasn't been a thing before as far as let's take all the movies and narrow it down to however many they're going to choose that are on the shortlist. Like we normally just get the nominees, but not like here's who could be nominated and then a few weeks later the nominees. So I thought that was interesting that this year they're doing that for a shortlist type deal.
I didn't even know about that. So I appreciate you telling me. I'm not aware of that being a thing.
It
might be, but I didn't even hear that part of the news. I read the little blurb you sent, but I might have missed that.
So that's interesting there. Again, I don't know if that's a normal thing, but I feel like we don't really hear about it much. And then nominations will come out Monday, March 15th of 2021, the Oscars, Sunday, April 25th, and then the long-awaited Academy Museum, which was supposed to open this year, I believe, will now be opening Friday, April 30th of 2021. We'll see if that museum ever opens. I would like to go to that museum someday as I love
Me
movies,
too.
But it seems like it's been delayed so many times now that I don't know if it's like Avatar 2. I don't know if it's ever gonna come out or not or open. So which will
happen
first?
Did you see
the Academy Museum or Avatar?
The nominations for the Oscars? That's the Ides of March, which is the day that Brutus stabbed Caesar. So we'll see if that works in someone's favor. It might not though.
Maybe that movie with George Clooney and Ryan Gosling will get nominated just like retroactively.
Again.
Like, we have to nominate this again for Best Picture. So that's Oscars news. Some little other quick things before we get into our review. One, Tom Hanks' new movie, Greyhound. We talked a few weeks ago about how that is going to be exclusively on Apple TV Plus. Well, they have now given a release date. It will be out on July 10th. So a couple of weeks from now, we'll be hitting Apple TV Plus. It was originally supposed to be in theaters on Father's Day weekend. So as we're recording that would be this weekend. As you're hearing this, this would have been a few days ago. It would have been in the theaters. So it'll be out on July 10th on Apple TV Plus. So I'm excited to watch that. I don't know how much buzz it's going to get. A new trailer came out when they announced that new release date, and it looks pretty interesting, but we'll see. It has basically Tom Hanks in it and then nobody else big. So it's really just kind of relying on him. So that'll be out in July. So you can, again, exclusively on Apple TV Plus, and you can check that out. It's a World War II movie and premiering on July 10th. And then two other quick movie release date moves. I know we were talking about Tenet for the longest time being the first big movie that was going to be back in movie theaters to kind of kick off the summer movie season. And Tenet has moved its release date officially to July 31st. So it has pushed itself back by 2 weeks.
Yeah, so that's going to make all the difference, Jared.
It really is. In this COVID-19 world, 2 weeks, we've, you know, we see that 2 weeks is a long time for cases to go down for sure. So, I mean, it's, you know, crazy ridiculous how much can happen in 2 weeks. Not really.
Ridiculous.
So instead, on July 17th, they're going to re-release Inception. In that slot is the 10-year anniversary of Inception. So if you've ever wanted to see that on the big screen and you haven't had the chance to, you'll be able to do that. And then Mulan on July 24th still has its same release date. So that would really be the movie that would kind of kick off the big movies coming out for the summer. So we'll see if Mulan stays on July 24th or if it moves too. And then also one other movie that got delayed a little bit and will be coming out now in October instead of coming out in August like it was originally tended to is Wonder Woman 1984. So that'll be out October 2nd now. So Katie, you have to wait a little bit longer before you can see Chris Pine in all his glory.
Man, at least I have a Tom Hanks film to see while I wait for Chris Pine. And I just want to throw out again for everyone, all the haters, I love them for very different reasons. So yeah.
Yes, understandable. So those are the things that have been moved around at this point. I really am interested in seeing Wonder Woman 1984.
Me too.
It was supposed to be out already, then it was going to come out in August, and now it's been pushed to October. So it's coming out later this year. But I think if movie theaters are able to reopen and we're able to go back to the theater in a couple of months, I think the second half of the year is going to be really loaded with, like, from October to January, it's going to be just like huge release after huge release pretty much.
Yes. I mean, I don't want to predict anything at this point because I feel like 2020 is the worst, but
yeah,
I'm hoping
I have no
you're
idea.
Right. And I do appreciate, I definitely love having things to look forward to. And there are mm-hmm. a lot of good movies on the horizon. So it's going to be a good year, for, if nothing else, for movies.
Yes. And if nothing does come out and the Oscars happen next year, then this movie could definitely get nominated for Best Picture because it's probably one of the 10 best movies that we've seen so far this year of the things that have come out, which have been like 7 movies. So also one more thing on the Oscars I forgot to mention. I know you know, Katie, how normally they for Best Picture, they can do anywhere between 5 and 10 movies. They have said that they're going to do 10 moving forward. So they will nominate 10 movies this next year for Best Picture. Like that's already been wow. locked in. So,
okay.
Which is kind of interesting, but every year there's normally discussion of like, this movie didn't get nominated for Best Picture, but you had a slot for it. So why didn't it get in there or something like that? Mm-hmm. So now they're just going to have 10 movies nominated for Best Picture. So
wow. Thank you, Jared. Good
next
updates
year for the Oscars. So no corrections this week. And we'll move into some things that we're watching and reading right now. One thing that I started watching on Hulu is I really like cooking competition shows. And I started watching just before we started recording, actually, I started watching Top Chef, which I had never seen before, which comes on Bravo. And I started just like right smack dab in the middle with like season 10, because I was like, that seems like a good place to start. But it's pretty interesting so far. I like it. It definitely focuses more on the food. Some of these cooking shows focus on the drama between the contestants, which I don't love because I'm more interested in like how they actually cook the stuff and how that gets done. Mm-hmm. So Top Chef is really very food focused. And this season you have Emeril Lagasse as a judge, Wolfgang Puck as a judge. So like some big celebrity chefs are in this season of Top Chef that I'm watching. And season 10, they're up to like season 20 something right now. But I liked it the first two episodes that I watched. So I'll probably keep cruising along with that.
That's cool. Jared, I did not know that you liked cooking shows. I will remember this for the future if I have a recommendation.
Good to know. Yeah, I like the cooking competition shows. I think those are very interesting. I used to watch a lot of Food Network back in the day when I was mm-hmm. growing up with my parents. So I always liked like Iron Chef and things like that that were just kind of interesting. I think it's interesting mm-hmm. when somebody has to cook like a really fancy dish really fast because I can barely cook like, you know, mac and cheese in less than 30 minutes. So when somebody can make a huge dish.
I'm not into cooking shows, but I'm really into dancing shows.
Okay.
Any not talent shows like World yes. of Dance, So You Think You Can Dance, Dancing with the Stars. I'm into all of them.
Okay.
So I could watch
good
those forever. Yeah.
Okay. good to know. So other than that, I'm just kind of reading the same stuff. I haven't really picked up anything new. That was the only thing. But other than that, haven't made a ton of progress on my books. It's been kind of a busy week for me because we went back to the office in full force. Mm-hmm. So I've been working from there my entire work day, which definitely takes a lot more time out of the day than you realize when you've been working half the day from home for like the last 3 months, just how much more time you have to do stuff. So I haven't made a lot of progress on my books, but I am still reading and enjoying that. But nothing new to report other than Top Chef.
Well, that's great. I actually don't have a lot of book news either today, which I know is astounding. But I did finish Jared, all of 90 Day Fiancé and the spinoff series Happily Ever After.
Wow.
I am currently watching the newest season of Riverdale on Netflix. Please tell Allison because I know she likes it too.
Yep, she does.
And then I actually watched an entire season of a show on Netflix over the weekend, but it was either 8 or 10 episodes. It's the show Marcella. It's a BBC series. It is so freaking good. It's a crime show. But I feel like the British are so good at these like really dark crime dramas. Mm-hmm. So I eat those up. So anytime I see one on Netflix, I'll watch it. I can't even tell you how many I've watched, but it was great. So I watched that over the weekend. And then I'm reading two books now. I won't tell you what they are because I don't want to diss them on air, but they're not my favorite. Like they're fine, but they're not like life changing. So I'm kind of just trying to get those done. One's a leadership book for work, so that's why it's kind of boring. And then the other one is a nonfiction book, and it is good. It's very readable, but it's an author I've read before, but I'm just not as into this story. But I have already received some of those books on race that I ordered, a couple of them.
Okay.
So I'll start those eventually, and not eventually, but I will start those. I just don't know what day. And then I definitely am going to do Becoming and The Nightingale are my next two because I've been putting them off, and now's the time. So I'll let you know when those get started.
Good to know. So that's what we've been watching and reading right now in our news. So with that, we'll move into our review of The Five Bloods. And this was released on June 12th on Netflix. It's rated R for strong violence, grisly images, and pervasive language. Definitely a hard R. There's some scenes in this movie that are pretty shocking and definitely very like provocative, especially from a violence standpoint. So just keep that in mind. Definitely not one to watch with the kiddos hanging out in the room.
No.
It's 2 hours and 34 minutes. It's pretty long. IMDb 6.8 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes critics 92%, audience 58%. That's a big split right there between the critics and the audience, and we'll get into that a little bit more as we go on. So no box office to report since it was all streaming. I don't think this was originally scheduled to come out in theaters anyway. I think it was a straight to Netflix thing anyway.
I think you're
I don't think it was going to come out in theaters. I'll check that. But it is on Netflix. So if you have Netflix, you can check it out there. Okay, so here I just found it. So it was supposed to premiere at, I always screw the name of this film festival up. It's just Cannes, right? Cannes Film Festival. Not Cannes. Case.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're exactly right. You can say can.
Yeah.
But it is can. It is can.
Is it? Okay.
You can say either. It's French. I think can probably makes us sound more like American, but I do think they actually pronounce it like that.
Okay. So anyway,
I'm no expert. I'm trying to learn French, but it doesn't come up a lot in my language studies. So
so it was supposed to premiere there and then play in theaters in May or June before streaming on Netflix, which did not happen. And then upon its release this past weekend, it was the top streamed thing on Netflix. So a lot of people did watch it this past weekend. And with that, we'll move into the synopsis for the movie, which if you don't know, it's about 4 African-American vets who battle the forces of man and nature when they return to Vietnam, seeking the remains of their fallen squad leader and the gold fortune he helped them hide. So it's told through a lot of flashbacks. It's told through kind of, we know we have this treasure out here, but we don't remember exactly where we put it. So we're going to try to go find it. That's kind of the synopsis of the movie. So there's some reviews of this. First up, we have Jake Wilson of The Age, which is an Australian publication, who says this everything but the kitchen sink approach can be his strength. But while The Five Bloods doesn't entirely lack heat, it never really gets cooking. And we'll talk about that a little bit more in our likes and dislikes, because for both of us, one thing that we said was that it was just hard to stay interested and engaged with this movie, which we'll get into more in a few minutes. So next up, we have Josephine Livingston of The New Republic, who says, "Beneath the layer of blood and the ever-present threat of death, The Five Bloods is a study in intimate masculine relationships, specifically black ones, and the way those bonds are exploited in the name of war." And then finally, we have James Berardinelli of Real Reviews, who says, "Is Lee preaching to the choir? Perhaps, but those not already in the fold who give the film a chance may discover that the things Lee is saying are hard to disagree with, regardless of your race, creed, or color." This, of course, is directed by Spike Lee, 93 directing credits. Some of his bigger films include Do the Right Thing, Jungle Fever, Malcolm X, and She's Gotta Have It. He's been nominated for 5 Oscars and finally won for Best Adapted Screenplay back in 2019 for Black Klansman, which is a very good movie starring John David Washington and also Adam Driver. And his next film is called Prince of Cats and is currently in pre-production. So that'll, again, we don't really know release dates anymore because of coronavirus. So when things are supposed to come out, we just say they're working on them. We don't know when they're actually going to be out. So he's definitely directed a lot of things. Also a very avid New York Knicks fan. You would probably know that if you're a Pacers fan. Him and Reggie Miller, not super big friends back in the day when the Pacers would play the Knicks. So there's definitely a big rivalry there as well. And we'll take a quick break here on the Silver Screen Podcast, and then we'll get into our likes and our dislikes of The Five Bloods. And we're back here on the Silver Screen Podcast talking about The Five Bloods, which is directed by Spike Lee. That is how the title is spelled, by the way. I just want to say that. I'm not like just doing that as a thing. It's D-A, Five
and
Bloods.
And it's five with the five, number five, yes. Not spelled out.
Correct. Yeah. Instead of the word the. So this has kind of an ensemble cast. There's a big group of characters that do go to try and find this gold that they've buried. It's kind of a little group of guys. So the first one of those is Delroy Lindo, and he plays Paul.
Thank you, Jared. I was going to say, too, this is one of those movies where every single character, I was like, I've seen this guy in so many things, but I couldn't think of like directly where I saw them. So hopefully this clears this up for some people, because I knew all of the actors, but I couldn't place which one I knew from where. So Delroy Lindo is quite famous. He's actually an English actor. He's best known for starring in Malcolm X. He was alongside Denzel, right?
Yeah,
it is Denzel. Sorry, I had to think about it. Get Shorty. And also Ransom, the movie with Mel Gibson. I had seen him in Law & Order SVU. He's also been in This Is Us, the TV show that's super popular now, and The Cider House Rules. Great, but one of the saddest movies I've ever seen. He has been nominated for a slew of awards, but he has won 2 Satellite Awards, which is quite a big thing. And his next project, it's a sci-fi drama series, but movie, I believe, but it's entitled 001 Lithium X.
Oh, cool. So, Elon Musk came up with the title for that
Exactly. That's well said. But he is definitely a very handsome man. He looks to me like a classic actor face, Delroy. So anyway, that's Delroy Lindo. Then we have Jonathan Majors. He plays David. He plays the son in the movie of Paul, of Delroy Lindo. This man graduated from Yale with an MFA in acting. So just want to say he's beautiful and intelligent in case anyone's interested. although I didn't look up if he's married or anything,
but I'll check it out here.
Thank you. Please do. He is best known for The Last Black Man in San Francisco, White Boy Rick, and When We Rise. And he has 3 upcoming projects already, including a recurring role in a TV series called Lovecraft Country. Next up, we have Clark Peters. I will say Clark Peters is my favorite character in the movie. He plays Otis, although I disagree with some of his choices, but he's a phenomenal actor. He was, to me, the most recognizable. He's best known for The Wire, 3 Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri, and John Wick. I knew him from the TV show Damages with Glenn Close and Rose Byrne. And he has also been nominated for a string of awards, including the Image Awards and the Award Circuit Community Awards. And next, he's going to star in Sexual Healing, which is a movie about Marvin Gaye's life, which I would love to see. And I think that's a cool tie-in to this movie because Marvin Gaye is a prevalent musician throughout the entire film.
Yes, he is.
And Norm Lewis, next up, we have Norm Lewis. He plays Eddie. So you've probably seen Norm in a lot of things. He's been in Kimmy Schmidt, Mrs. America, which is out now on Hulu. And he was even the voice of a newscaster in Just Mercy, which we covered in our last episode. So that I wouldn't have recognized that because you just hear his voice, but I thought that was really cool. He was also in Sex and the City 2 and Stand By Me, which I know is one of my dad's favorite movies. And he currently doesn't have any upcoming projects listed, but he certainly stays busy. Then we have Isaiah Whitlock Jr. He plays Melvin. He is another familiar face that had so many acting credits to his name. He has recurring roles in Veep, or had. I know that show's over. Also Law & Order SVU, which is what I knew him from. And then he was also in Black Klansman. And then next he'll have a recurring role in a TV series called Your Honor. And lastly, we have Chadwick Boseman, who I'm assuming many people know. He plays the character, I love the name, Stormin Norman in this film. He is best known for Black Panther, Avengers Infinity War, and 42, which is, of course, about Jackie Robinson. I thought that was cool because he is currently 42 years old. Arjun and I talk about Chadwick all the time. He is so good looking, and he looks like he's about 30, and he's 42. Yeah. That man is an actual Benjamin Button aging in reverse.
He really is. He's going to get to like 60 and they're still going to have him play. Like when he's 60, he'll start playing roles where he's like a father, because then he'll look old enough to be a dad, which he doesn't look at this point. Because like you said, he looks like he's 27 still.
Yeah. And he, I also noticed where, I know we're not in the likes, but there is a scene where he has a fro for a lot of the movie, but had a pick in his fro. He looked, it was such a good shot, first of all, on camera, but he looks like he could actually be like fighting in Vietnam in the 70s. Like he's got such a good 70s look. But Chadwick also, it's already been announced he is going to reprise his role. They are going to make a Black Panther 2, and it currently has a release date of 2022. So we'll see. We'll see, people.
We'll see if that does happen. Although I did read this week that some movies are starting back up production, like the new Jurassic World movie is starting back up production in the UK, and some other things are starting production once again. So it's kind of interesting, but that they are restarting, but they are doing that. So
yeah,
good to know. So, okay.
Awesome.
With that, we will kind of move into our likes and dislikes for this movie. And there's a couple things that we both liked and we both disliked. Of course, we'll start with our likes, but I know you mentioned Marvin Gaye and you did really like the movie or the music that was used by him in the movie.
Yes. Oh my gosh. I think the music in the 70s is kind of my favorite. Well, it's definitely one of my favorite time periods. I love the 40s too, but like CCR, Marvin Gaye, any Motown, I love it all. So to hear Marvin Gaye throughout a lot of this was fantastic. But what was so cool, so I found an article on Vanity Fair. You can go read it now. The article came out on the 17th, so just yesterday. It's by Anthony Bresnikan, but it talks about the meaning behind Marvin Gaye's haunting song, which they're referring to what's going on. So what's going on, excuse me, it's what's going on. What's going on, though, he actually had a CD called that, and it was in reference to the Vietnam War because, as this article talks about, he actually had a brother. So Marvin Gaye did not fight in Vietnam, but he had a brother that did serve in Vietnam. He did three different tours and was a radio operator, and he would write letters to Marvin all the time. So Marvin was getting like firsthand experience about what was going on, and then he kept writing these songs. So it's just freaky to hear the lyrics like, brother, 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 there's far too many of you dying, is how it starts. And it just has such a haunting presence, that song, especially when they play the part that it's just him singing. There's no music or anything behind it. No musical instruments.
Yeah.
And then, so I thought that was an awesome connection because I feel like it just makes it all the more real to hear that about Marvin Gaye. And of course, Marvin Gaye met a very sad end. He was shot and killed by his father in real life. I do think that's going to be covered in that movie I referenced earlier.
Okay.
Also, the last connection that they talk about in this article, I found it so fascinating. So there's another musical reference in Into Five Bloods that I totally missed, but it has its root in Motown. So the hint, they name all the characters. So it's Paul, David, Otis, Melvin, and Eddie.
Okay.
And Spike Lee said all the characters' names, those are the five guys from the original Temptations.
Okay.
Which I thought was so cool. What a clever idea.
That is. That is a really cool way to do that and just kind of sneak that in. So music is definitely used a lot throughout this movie in various points. And I think Spike Lee and whoever worked on that along with him did a good job of picking the songs out that they wanted to use and making it sound really, like you said, very timely for the time period that it was that it was set in. So another Oops, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, sorry. I was just going to say that it was nice to hear the music, like to really pick up on the music immediately from the beginning to the end, because I feel like the last few movies we've done, I haven't been impressed with the music. And so it was like especially noticeable this time around.
Yeah, that makes sense for sure. The next thing that we both kind of liked is this movie starts like a lot of Spike Lee movies start, where the first couple minutes are like historical footage or still photos of things that have actually happened, real life events. This movie is no different. The first 5 minutes or so start with those types of shots and scenes of things that have actually happened regarding Vietnam and the war that occurred. So that really just gets you into the movie pretty quickly, like the setting for the film and how, what's going to happen kind of. And that's one thing I do appreciate about his movies is that he definitely sets up the time period and like the location for his movies pretty quickly in terms of doing that at the beginning of them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I completely agree. I have a little point later on in one of my likes because, but don't let me forget to tell you something that I talked with Arjun about. One of those opening shots that was really powerful.
Another one that is another scene that's kind of fun is this movie kind of starts off and it's almost like, I don't know, it's almost kind of like, I don't want to compare it to this because they're not the same movie at all, but it reminded me of like The Hangover in the beginning where they all kind of are, they all are friends, but they're all getting back together and they meet up in this hotel and they're going to go search for their treasure that they've buried. But first, before they do that, they just want to kind of have like a fun night out on the town. So they go to a restaurant and then they go dancing after that. And the scene of them dancing is shot really cool as far as like the camera is just kind of pulling back as they're dancing on the dance floor, but they have like some nice drinks in their hands and they're just having a good old time. But it was a really joyful scene just to see these guys like kind of tearing it up on the dance floor. That was one of my, I think, favorite scenes of the movie, actually, was just them having fun dancing.
Me too. Oh, I absolutely agree with you because it reminded me, I think The Hangover's fair. The way it made me feel was that first, that one of those opening scenes was like La La Land, because La La Land was so beautiful. It's like a stunning, attractive thing to watch, and the music's going and the lighting is great and the songs are great. It was all of that put together made such a beautiful scene to watch. And that's exactly how I felt when I was watching these men dance in this club, and they were so happy to see each other, and you can tell that they had this sense of brotherhood between them. So I agree with you, definitely one of my favorite scenes and one of my top likes of the film.
Also, this is one of Spike Lee's most expensive movies that he's made in terms of budget. But one way you can kind of see that play out is the costumes and the location. And it still doesn't have a huge budget. It's between, people estimate between $35 and $45 million. So that's not a really big budget by today's standards. But by Spike Lee standards, it's one of the larger budgets he's worked with. But you can definitely tell in this movie because they do go to some different locations. There's some actual, like there's some actual helicopters and army machinery used in this movie at various points too. But I know that was one of our likes, was the costumes were really cool with the flashbacks that occurred and also the present day, and then the location where it's set, especially once they get into like that forest and they are trying to find the gold. It kind of just stays in there for the rest of the movie pretty much.
Yeah, I especially loved the costuming because I felt like these guys, this is very true to what men would wear, like men at a certain time of life, especially Vietnam vets. I loved all their hats. Like some of them, one of them had like a newsboy cap. Mm-hmm. Another one had a Trump hat on that is the butt of a joke a couple times. But it's like their costumes were, I felt like, very realistic. And I also thought it was realistic how, you know, they went on that trip to go find the gold. And so they're wearing the same thing for the majority of the film. But I thought that was really real. I don't think a lot of guys in the middle of Vietnam looking for buried treasure would bring an outfit change or like other shoes or anything. So I thought that was great. And then I also wanted to mention the location. I mean, I've heard Vietnam is beautiful, and that was definitely telling in this film because it is just green beyond green and beautiful. beautiful. Everywhere they went was beautiful. I noticed there weren't as many flowers, and it could have just been where they were deep in the jungle, but the green was just astonishing and beautiful in a way that I wish it could be like that all year round here.
Also, I feel like, too, one of my other likes is I just feel like there's not a ton of movies about the Vietnam War. There's definitely mm-hmm. more movies that are made about World War II and those types of wars. But, of course, there's like Good Morning Vietnam, Full Metal Jacket, Apocalypse Now, A Platoon. Those are all based on the Vietnam yeah. War. But as far as like that's the whole time period from like, you know, when it occurred to now. And the fact is yeah. there just haven't been a lot of films made about that particular war. So it is kind of interesting to see that time period discussed once again and kind of diving back into that time in history, which wasn't all that long ago, honestly, in the grand scheme of things, but just doesn't get like talked about a ton.
Right, right. And speaking of that, too, I think the thing I really enjoyed about this is that this is telling a story about the Black experience, which is what, you know, you and I were like, well, we want to focus on movies that share the Black experience, especially for this month with all that's going on. And also because there's phenomenal filmmakers like Spike Lee. And the thing I talked to Arjun about after the film, I always like to get his take because he is a big fan, mm-hmm. but also he has some really astute observations. And I said, you know, there were parts where I was like, I don't feel like I'm getting a lot of like understanding of a Black person's experience in the war.
Yeah.
But then he said, I mean, this stuck with me. I'm so proud of Arjun for picking up on this. And I heard it, but I didn't think about it much at the time. But the quote at the very beginning, like during those historical shots at the beginning, I want to say it was Muhammad Ali. He was saying something. I know that someone in the film was saying, I went over to Vietnam or whatever, and no one ever called me the N-word.
Okay.
And he was implying correctly that he was facing less bigotry and hatred in a country that we were fighting a war with than he was his own country by white people. And I was blown away by that. And I think it's really worth discussing. And even for that quote alone and just getting that sentiment out of this movie makes it worth watching, I think. And I enjoyed seeing how these men felt about, there was another comment in the film about like dying for their country. Like, we built this country. It was just like things I've heard on the news the last week where people are like, we built this country, we can burn it to the ground. You know, I don't like violence and stuff, mm-hmm. but I get that sentiment. And hearing that in this movie, I can't imagine what it was like to go to fight in this police action. But I also can't imagine what it would be like to already be oppressed and treated horribly and then have to go defend your country that treats you horribly. So really, really moving. But I thought that Spike Lee's really good at telling stories like this. Mm-hmm. I don't love everything he does, but I respect any director like him or Tarantino and some of the others who have a very unique way of storytelling. So way to go, Spike Lee, on that one.
And I will say, even though, you know, like you said, I don't love his direction style sometimes, but uh-huh. he always takes on movies that are kind of difficult topics. Like, this is about the Vietnam War. Black Klansman is about the Ku Klux Klan. Like, he's not shying away from those issues and those things that happened in our history that we need to talk about, that, you know, things need to be said about those particular times and events and things. So he's definitely not one to shy away from those more controversial stories, whereas other directors may not yeah. be willing to take that on. So that's one thing I've always respected about him, is he's definitely willing to take on those tough issues and try to tell the story in the best way possible. So,
yeah.
This is going to be a spoiler alert right now for this movie. So if you haven't seen it, if you want to watch it, come back and listen to the rest of this, because we're going to move into dislikes here in just a second for The Five Bloods. But one like I had, which is, I know, sort of one of your dislikes, but I wanted to bring up the landmine scene in the movie mm-hmm. that basically happens. So what happens is Eddie in the movie is kind of walking backwards at a campfire. And then after that, a landmine goes off and he basically gets his a very gruesome scene, but gets his torso and his arms blown off. That was not what I liked about that scene. What I liked is kind of what happens next. So David realizes he's also stepped on a landmine, but hasn't picked his foot up yet. So he's just standing there, but he knows if he moves, it's going to go off. So his dad, Paul, devises a plan on how they can get him off of that landmine without him dying. And that whole sequence for about 10 minutes or so is very tense. And I thought it was very well directed and very well acted. It was one of my favorite scenes in the movie, even though it's one of the more gruesome ones. But that scene had me very engaged because it's, you know, it's a father trying to protect his son, but also trying to lead this group of people, some of which he doesn't really know that well, because those three other people kind of show up there in the forest as well, and he has them help with the situation too. But he kind of, you know, directs everybody to make sure they can get his son off the landmine, which they do. But I thought that was a very, like, just well shot, well acted scene in the film. Because I don't know about you, but I felt very tense during that whole sequence. Like, I didn't know what was going to happen.
That was definitely one of my favorite scenes, too. I couldn't look away. And I couldn't agree with you more. Like, it was engaging, but also I thought I wouldn't go to Vietnam to that area specifically because of landmines. You don't have to tell me anything else. Snakes, bugs, I don't care. The landmines alone that you could step in.
Yeah.
I want nothing to do with it. So that definitely, I appreciate that they put that in the film because I think that's pretty realistic. And the fact that they found however many in the film, three or four.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the fact I think that was a great scene.
The first one doesn't happen until a little bit. They've been in the forest already and are kind of searching and going on their journey, I think is, a good job by Spike Lee to kind of put that in, but put it in later. So you're not really expecting it as an audience that it is going to happen. But definitely, like you said, a real threat, even still today, probably in various parts of Vietnam where those are still set and haven't gone off. So with that, we'll move into our dislikes for the movie. We have a few. We thought this was pretty good overall, but there are a few things that we disliked. One, I think our big one is that we just both had trouble when we watched it staying engaged and staying interested for the entire time. I don't know why. It was just, it started and I was like, okay, I'm good. Let's get into it. And I watched it for the first 30, 45 minutes pretty intently. And then I was like, I don't know if it's because I couldn't connect to a character. I couldn't connect to the story. I don't know what the issue was that was me having trouble kind of staying interested in the movie, but the rest of it I had on kind of while I was doing other things. I wasn't paying attention to it super closely at times. And I think that's where some of the audience score from the Rotten Tomatoes comes in at 58%. Is I don't know, the critics, I think they really enjoy this story and they like Spike Lee as a director and the stories he tells, like we said in our likes, but I feel like from a pacing standpoint, it was just kind of slow.
Yeah, pacing, that's a really good point. There were scenes like what we were just talking about where I was super interested in what was happening.
Yep.
And the overall story, I thought it was an important story. I am glad I watched it. And I liked parts of it a lot more than I thought I would. But I think it's partly because I don't have much of an interest in the Vietnam War. And also the Vietnam War is such a polarizing topic. Like people were irate about it. And then also some people were gung-ho about it, but it caused so much strife in the US. And so I think that's partially why we don't have a lot of movies about it. But I had a hard time staying engaged too, because it was so long. If he had cut this down to like an hour 45 or 2 hours, I think I would have been fine. It's like, I really do think 30 minutes of this could have been cut out. I hope Spike Lee doesn't come for me after this. I say that respectfully. I mean, he did a beautiful job, but I did not think that there was enough going on that it needed to be 2 hours and 34 minutes.
Yeah, it is pretty long. And I mean, his last movie, Black Klansman, is pretty long, too. But I felt like with that one, the story was so interesting that whole time was needed. Like I was engaged for that whole movie when I watched that the first time. Like that was very interesting film to me. But this one, I think it, like you said, you definitely could probably cut out like 30, 45 minutes of this. Cause once we got to like an hour and a half in, I don't know. It was just the fact that I still knew I had an hour left. Cause Netflix, it's very easy to just pop up the time bar and see how much longer you have. See where you are in the movie. So I think at that point I was kind of just like, okay, I'll keep watching this, but I'm not like super interested for whatever reason. So some other dislikes with this movie. The language is very strong in this movie. It is one thing for sure. There's a lot of words said kind of all around by all characters in this film. So if you're not a fan of strong language, this is definitely not one to check out. Kind of like Uncut Gems, this also has a lot of language in it.
Yeah, that really bothered me. I mean, there was a lot of GD. There was a lot of the N word. There's a lot of the F word. I mean, I get it. He is a lot like Tarantino with that. I mean, they love to put those words in. Mm-hmm. And I get it. I get that that's realistic. It's just something that when we're talking about personal likes and dislikes, I do not like excessive language like that, especially when sometimes I'm just certain words or some of those phrases I don't use. So yeah, it makes me deeply uncomfortable, but I think that's the point.
Another thing that is a big point in this movie is extreme violence. It is very violent. We talked about the scene where the landmine goes off. That what you see there with Eddie is very graphic, because basically his, like we said, his torso and his arms are gone, but he's still talking for a second and his like head's still moving because that didn't get blown up. So it's very like very gruesome there. Some of the flashback scenes are kind of gruesome, which makes sense. It is set during a war. Yeah. So again, war is going to be gruesome. But then the end sequence as well is just a lot of gunshots going off and things like that. So that lasts like 15, 20 minutes is very, very violent too.
Yeah, and I think what could be triggering, there is a child that you see that is a Vietnamese child that's dead. That was probably the worst for me. I think, though, the scene that stunned me the most was at the beginning when they're showing the clips, the old footage of historical things. I had seen, and Arjun had seen, a picture of, a Vietnamese man who had been shot in the head, but we had never seen the video footage, and they showed the video where someone was shot in the head and you see the whole thing. And it was different than like Tiger King, when you can only imagine what's happening mm-hmm. in the corner. But it's quite another thing to actually see someone get shot, especially in the head. So that was, I think that could be triggering for a lot of people. And I'm not against showing violence like that in films and documentaries and things. I think sometimes to understand how horrible things are, like war, and should we really do this? And what is it like when you murder another human being? I think it's important to portray those things. But I'm just saying, if you're queasy or if violence bothers you, this is just not the film for you.
No, for sure. So also one final dislike is that the character Paul, the main character in the movie, is he's kind of crazy.
The worst. Like,
yeah.
He's the worst.
Various points. So and obviously he's gone through a lot of things in his life, but still his character is pretty unlikable in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't have specific things, and I can't say everything that I think about him, but he was very unlikable, and I am not a black man. I have never fought in a war. So there's a lot about his experience that I cannot relate to. For many reasons, but I get that he has PTSD. People have strained relationships with children and spouses and all that stuff. But yeah, I just did not like him. So he was a very unlikable character. Whereas all the other men, I liked something about all of them. And yeah, I didn't find a lot of redeeming qualities in him.
Yeah, for sure. So with that, we'll give our scores now for the Five Bloods. If you don't know, we do scores based on a scale of out of 100. So basically just like you would grade a test. So we give a score out of 100 for all of our movies that we review. And I'm going to give this movie a 70 out of 100. So a little bit higher than the audience on Rotten Tomatoes. I enjoyed it. I think, like we've said, movies about difficult subjects do need to get made and are interesting to watch. And especially during a time period where I was not alive and I did not grow up in and I didn't live through, it's always interesting to see movies made in current day based on those time periods, because it helps me understand a little bit more about what happened during that time period in our history. But like I said, it was a little slow in parts. The story didn't totally intrigue me at various times. And then, like we said, I probably could have cut 30-45 minutes out of this, and if it was like an hour 45 or even like you said 2 hours, I think I would be a little higher on it. But that's my score, 70 out of 100.
I think that's great. I'm regretting my score a little bit, but I'm just gonna go with it. I don't know if it's a good idea, but I went with 76.
Okay.
Now if we were scoring on would you watch this movie again, it'd be like 17 for me. But I do think it's well done. I think it's a story that's important. I'm really glad we watched this film. I did learn about the black experience because of this. I learned just a different point of view, and I think that's really important. I think Spike Lee has a very unique way of storytelling. It's just not, it's not a film that left me feeling good. And it's not one that I plan to watch again. And out of Spike Lee films I've seen, I think I've seen three or four now, Black Klansman is still by far my favorite one.
Yeah, that one is really good. And I can't remember, that's on some streaming service right now, but I don't know which one it is. I can't remember if I saw it on Hulu or if it was on HBO or Amazon Prime. I can't remember, but I think it's on one of those. So if you have various streaming services, you may, if you haven't seen Black Klansman, you may look for it if you haven't seen it, because it is very good and it's available. It's streaming a couple different places right now. So those are our scores for The Five Bloods, directed by Spike Lee. And you can find the Silver Screen Podcast lots of different places, wherever you're listening now, of course, but also in Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn, all of those various places you can listen to the show. Follow the show on social media at Podcast Silver on Twitter and Instagram, and then search The Silver Screen Podcast on Facebook. Also, we'll mention real quick, we both graduated from UIndy and they did a little write-up about us, a little article about our podcast, and we'll put that in the description for this episode too. So if you want to read that and check it out, you can read that. They did a great job kind of doing a little write-up on the both of us, so we wanted to, highlight that.
That was really exciting. Thank you. And Savannah interviewed us, and she is also an English major, so I was an English major too, but it was really nice of them to do that, and we are very proud. We can definitely say we both enjoyed our college experience, and we're very proud to be Greyhounds.
Yes, for sure. And the next episode of the Silver Screen Podcast, we're going to continue with stories regarding African Americans or directed by African Americans, and we're going to be reviewing The Help, which is on Netflix right now, that came out in 2011. Also, I think the only movie in which Bryce Dallas Howard and Jessica Chastain are in the same movie. I get them confused a lot, but they are both in The Help. So, and Emma Stone. So all three famous female redheads in Hollywood are in this particular movie, along with Viola Davis and Octavia Spencer. This was a stacked cast that has even gotten more stacked over the years based on what these ladies have done. When they were in this, Emma Stone was still kind of a little bit of an unknown, and some of these other actresses as well, but they've all gone on to do great things. So we'll be reviewing that on the next episode of the Silver Screen Podcast, which is The Help, and you can watch that on Netflix to get ready for our next review.
Until next time, we'd like to thank the Academy.